welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Katie, and today we unfortunately don't have my co-host Pamela with me, but I have the fabulous Dr. Curtis Rogers from the State Library. And we have here also a wonderful interviewee, John M. Scherer from the Historic Columbia Foundation. And I'm gonna hand it over to Curtis for a second to talk about Speaker at the Center, because we had a great session with him today.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for thinking I'm fabulous. That's always always a nice introduction. But yes, the South Carolina Center for the Book is an affiliate of the Library of Congress Center for the Book in Washington, D.C. And we do a number of different programs, one of which is Speaker at the Center. And for our fall and winter 2016-2017 lineup, we have had today John Scherer from the Historic Columbia Foundation talk about Remembering Columbia, which is an amazing book. It really, I mean, the photos, the images, the history that, you know, we tend to forget, we tend to not think about on a daily basis, but seeing some of these images today at Speaker at the Center really got me interested in a lot of what is a part of the history of Columbia. So I thought it was just fascinating. But anyway, we do have a number of events. You can go to our website at readsc.org and check out all of the stuff we have to offer.
Thank you. And we're going to actually include all those links in the description below. So don't worry if you don't catch the URL right away. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start and just dive right on into the interview. And my first question for John is, so you're the Director of Cultural Resources at the Historic Columbia Foundation. So tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean exactly? What do you do?
Yeah, that's one of those titles that's kind of nebulous for folks. And they're like, what in the world? So as Director of Cultural Resources at Historic Columbia, I'm responsible for overseeing our horticultural staff, our museum staff, and our facility staff. I also work in conjunction with our executive director on historic preservation advocacy. I do a great deal of research. I work on the interpretation of historic properties under our care, community histories, you name it. So there's really a little bit of everything that's related to our city and county's past, be it the built culture or otherwise, that I'm responsible for. So no day is identical to the previous or the following. It's great.
Keeps it interesting.
Absolutely.
And so basically, you wear many hats.
Yes. Yeah. It would be kind of like a jester's hat with all the things hanging off of it. It's great. It's great.
Have you always enjoyed history?
That's a great question. I think I have. And it started probably in the 1970s when my parents, my sister and I, would often go to state parks and state historic sites throughout South Carolina. And then I naturally gravitated to history in my various classes, various grades, and then chose to almost double major in it in college as an undergraduate. But, you know, in terms of using history or embracing history as a job, that wasn't something that I'd really thought about until a very, very fortunate internship with the National Air and Space Museum, the Smithsonian, back in the early 90s. And that's what set it for me. That was kind of that moment when I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I need to be doing.
That's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, it really was.
To take advantage of.
It really was.
Definitely. Did you ever see yourself doing something else? I mean, how did you decide to work in your field?
Well, it was really that moment, if you would, of being in D.C., realizing that all of those English classes that I'd taken, all of the work that I'd done on writing pretty well, could merge nicely with the pursuit of history, with historic preservation. And I realized that master's in English that I was pursuing would certainly benefit me, but it might not necessarily benefit me in the ways that I'd initially perceived. So coming off of the internship with Smithsonian, I finished my thesis and graduated with a master's in English at Clemson. And then I immediately started looking into what else was out there. And so I began working at the National Trust for Historic Preservation at Drayton Hall as a frontline interpreter. And that's one of the best ways is interacting with the public. And that just kind of further propelled me into the museum field. Ultimately, it took me out of the state, took me out of the region. Mm-hmm. I relocated to New England and lived there for a couple of years working in museums and also working in social work as well. Ultimately, I came home. I came back to Columbia to pursue a master's in public history from the University of South Carolina. And at that time, I was offered a graduate assistantship with Historic Columbia during my master's program. So I took it, and then shortly before graduation, I was offered a full-time job. And my time at Historic Columbia has it's grown, and my experiences there have grown, and my responsibilities certainly have grown. So it's been a very rewarding opportunity for me as a native of Columbia to, I hope, give back in some small way to the betterment of the community.
That is wonderful. And I'm not going to lie, I always am fascinated whenever I run into people that went to Clemson, because my undergrad degree is also from Clemson, and I came back home for my master's. And it's interesting to always run into people that do the same thing.
Yeah.
I love that. All right, so tell us a little bit about your book, Remembering Columbia. I know there's a lot in this book, but just give a general synopsis of kind of what you were talking about at the beginning of Speaker at the Center.
Sure.
And also, I'd be interested in how long it took you to put it together, because it's an amazing work.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you. Well, you know, in terms of the time that it took to put the book together, it's kind of a moving target, because I would say that really ever since I came back to Columbia and started working at Historic Columbia, I worked very hard to build a visual literacy of what the city and the county was like over, you know, a period of time. And so that's not something that you can just digest in a year. And inevitably, you're going to be getting more information, new information. You're going to be exposed to collections that are outside of your institution. And it was that journey that kind of propelled my interest in writing this book, to offering folks an updated history of the city. It allowed me to really reach out and strengthen relationships, partnerships with area institutions such as the South Carolina State Museum, South Carolina Library, McKissick Museum, just to name a few, and private individuals who realized the importance of preserving historic photographs or ephemera, who said, you know, I think this is important, but perhaps it's more important than I realize, or I really know it's important and I want you to consider preserving it in some way, or helping me preserve it in some way. And so the impetus behind Remembering Columbia was to have Historic Columbia create a tool for people to use in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. Remembering Columbia promotes visual literacy. I think it frames people and events and places in up-to-date and perhaps different ways than previous histories have. So it gets us thinking differently. It gets us thinking critically in ways that I hope will lend themselves to building a more engaged citizenship for the next, you know, couple of generations that say, I'm really interested in shaping my community. And I have this historical record that allows me to see how the community was shaped up to this point. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
I love that you use the phrase visual literacy, but I'm curious, can you explain what that is for our listeners who might not exactly know that phrase?
Sure. I always encourage people to walk their city or to cycle or jog or whatever. When you get out of your vehicle and you take it at a pedestrian's pace, mm-hmm. you will see your built culture in ways that you may not necessarily see driving 35, 45, 50 miles an hour.
Right.
Depends on where you are, what time of day. When I mean visual literacy, it's the ability to recognize perhaps certain landmarks that remain with us, or certain landmarks that you knew existed, but you weren't exactly sure where they existed, and putting that in the context of their existence. Mm-hmm. A visual literacy allows us to look at not just an individual building, but perhaps an entire city block or a neighborhood or a district. You understand better the nuances. You understand in some respects how people came to generalize or stereotype, and you can break down those generalizations or those stereotypes and tease out really the fiber of what that community was like, or that certain block was like, or in some cases, an individual building, because you could talk about a building and someone might say, oh, well, that used to be this, mm-hmm. and it's saddled with all of this heavy, heavy memories. And others might say, oh my goodness, no, that was a brilliant place to be, and they would have had a totally different experience.
Yeah.
Then you look at it and say, all right, well, can these experiences and others coexist?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily being judgmental one way or the other, it's acknowledging that our past is not neat, it's not tidy, it's not always easy, it's certainly not always pleasant, but it's a part of what makes us who we are, and it's a part of our larger city's evolution, and we're still evolving. And so if we're aware of where we've been, whether it's 200 years ago or, you know, 50 years ago, hopefully we'll be able to better guide where we want the community to be in the next generation.
Mm-hmm. And I love how, just even in the presentation that you gave for Speak Up Ascender, you compared different images, and we talked about it and the differences between what is in Columbia now versus what it was back then. And I know with showing the Sanborn maps, it really does, it gives you a good history of what Columbia is and just the culture of it. And I think that's fascinating.
And one of the things I thought was fascinating is when you're looking at a specific image and you don't really know that much about an image and you start to deconstruct it, mm-hmm. you know, you're looking at all of the specifics and the nuances, like you said, and it's just fascinating all the information you can pull out of that, because, you know, what time period were the cars from, right. or, you know, were there still horses and buggies and right. that kind of thing. Just really amazing how you can learn so much just from one image.
It's very true. All right, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit, and okay. I want to ask you, what is your history with libraries?
What is my history with libraries?
Yes.
I love libraries. I love repositories of information, mm-hmm. but I also love libraries because they're places where people naturally come, really for a variety of reasons. Some people come just to be in a place where there is knowledge from all different types of media, and it's an environment that encourages learning. Some people come depending on where the library is or what part of the library, because it's a quiet place and they can reflect. Others like to come to libraries because there's a certain area where community engagement is fostered and there's lively discussion. I like to be able to go to a library and know that there's going to be, typically, something that I may have seen before and I embrace it, but also something new. And knowing that a library and an archive is a living, breathing thing. It's something that is evolving, and that it's not just an institution that is mired in stasis, that it's forward thinking while being respectful of the past. And that's very much how I like to see my museums and the stuff that I do in historic preservation. How do I use libraries? I use libraries around the clock, whether the building is open or not. I can access a lot of stuff online, mm-hmm. which is great, because sometimes when I start thinking about a research thread, I can't just shut it off. You know, if the library closes at 5:30 or 8 o'clock, I'm just getting going. You know, I'm just thinking about it at a different level. So I appreciate what all of the archivists and librarians and library science does for our community, whether it's at the State Library or, you know, it's at South Carolina Library or Richland Library. It's got a great local history room. I like to seek out libraries any kind and any time I can.
One of the things you mentioned during your presentation was about the South Carolina Digital Library, mm-hmm. and that's the scmemory.org mm-hmm. website that has an amazing volume of digitized images. Yeah. Do you use that as a resource a lot?
Yeah. The typical digital resources I use are everything from Sanborn maps to city directories to historic images, often in collections such as the Richland Library, for instance. There's some things that I don't necessarily include in my books, but I find enriching nonetheless. There's some really great magazines and even broadsides programs from football games, for instance. You know, so Carolina has its collections and Clemson's has its collections of these vintage brochures or programs, rather. So a host of things. Maps. I love maps. You know, of course, we touched on the Sanborn map today, but there's so many other types of maps out there.
Right.
And then, of course, manuscripts. Sometimes it's simply easier to see something when it's digital and you can enlarge it. So as I get older and my eyesight gets a little rougher, it's always better to be able to enlarge it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, that said, I still very much have a firm kind of foothold too in the tangible. I like to be able to go and I like to be able to hold a book. I like to be able to see, hopefully, the original Sanborn map, the original, you know, that is part of that digital surrogate.
Now, if anyone wants to learn a little bit more about Columbia, obviously they can buy your book. But what other resources can they gather and look
sure.
at to learn more about the city?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, please seek out Historic Columbia, and we can be easily reached. We're at www.historiccolumbia.org. If you go to our website, you'll find out not just about us as an institution, about the programming that we do, but also you'll have an opportunity to look at various tours that we have online. We have particularly digital histories of various neighborhoods in Columbia, and we're always adding to that. So you can go in and do, to some degree, things similar to what we did in the Remembering Columbia book. Certainly, please buy the book. Goodness. Buy it from us. That would be great. You could buy it at the museum shop at the Robert Mills House. But there are other outlets, too. There's so much information that's available. Go to the Columbia Visitor Center, you know, the CVB. Go to your other museums. Go to the State Museum, just to name a few. Contact me. I love to speak with people. I love to find out what kind of makes them tick and why they're interested in history. Oftentimes, I find that people are interested in history because they're really interested in what's going on now. Mm-hmm. And for me, the fact that history is vital and it's part of our everyday existence is one that I kind of preach. You know, people say, oh, that happened in the past, or oh, I don't really know if that's relevant. I'm like, you know what? Let's just go back and find something that may have been parallel. That's not to say that history repeats itself. That's often quoted, but that's a misquote. You can find that because of our human nature, there are certain parallels, regardless as to whether or not it was your parents' generation mm-hmm. or it was generations and millennia ago.
That's why I love that saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Right.
So true.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you for letting us interview you, and thank you for coming to speak at the center. We like to keep things short and sweet,
sure.
So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. I'm Katie.
And I'm Curtis.
And we're keeping it short and sweet.